Okay, welcome to the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. I have got a question for you right up front. The question is this: would you be willing to join a long-term research project, say something that goes for about 30 years, to see how a specific diet affects your physical and mental health? Now, I'd expect most of you would ask a couple of important questions before signing the consent form, such as, well, will the diet have any negative effects on my health? And will the diet help me stay at a healthy weight range over the duration of the study? Now, if the researchers told you that it's highly likely the diet will increase your body weight as well as your risk of a range of chronic lifestyle diseases like type 2 diabetes, metabolic syndrome, heart disease, stroke, cancer, dementia, then I think it's fair to assume you'd put down the pen and step away from the consent form. Well, in case you haven't noticed, you've invariably signed up to this research project years ago, since the 1980s actually. But that's unethical, I hear you scream. Of course it is. But the ethical implications of exposing millions of people to dietary guidelines that were not based on any scientific evidence appear secondary to the billions of dollars that can be made along the way. It was this single realization that I'd been exposed to some dodgy nutrition advice since my early childhood that made me want to explore and, believe it or not, try to disprove a low carbohydrate diet. Surely the government, health agencies, the education system, even my own GP had known about these unhealthy dietary guidelines. So why didn't someone say something? Well, it turns out that there were a few dissenting voices at the time the dietary guidelines were being developed. One of my favourite quotes comes from Dr. Philip Handler, who at the time was the president of the National Academy of Science, and he was asked to provide an expert opinion about the new dietary guidelines being proposed by a US Senate Select Committee on Health and Human Needs back in 1977. And Dr. Handler asked, and I quote, "What right has the federal government to propose that the American people conduct such a vast nutritional experiment with themselves as subjects on the strength of so very little evidence?" Now, Dr. Handler and a few other dissenting voices could see the future, and sadly, the future looked pretty bleak. So how have the last 30 to 40 years of dietary guidelines worked out? Well, we all know the stats. One in every two adults is now overweight or obese in most developed nations. According to the National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention, 30 million Americans have type 2 diabetes, with another 7 to 8 million undiagnosed. That's over 10% of the US population. And sadly, it's not much better in Australia, where according to Diabetes Australia, 280 people are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes every day. That's one person every 5 minutes. Governments around the world are charging headlong towards a financial cliff as the cost of chronic disease simply becomes unsustainable. As an example, in Australia, the total cost impact of diabetes alone is estimated at around $14.5 billion a year. Do you still want to be part of the research project? So what happened? How did we get fat? Well, let's take a step back and look at the big picture for a moment. If we condensed all of human existence into just a 24-hour period, then we have only engaged in large-scale agricultural practices in the last 4 minutes. So growing grains, for example, on a large scale. And our 20-fold increase in sugar consumption has only occurred in the past 5 seconds. In other words, when you consider the fact that humans have existed in a modern form for the past 200,000 years, we have dramatically changed our dietary habits very recently. And as a result, we are witnessing an explosion in obesity and other chronic diseases. We are essentially living through unprecedented times, and I have little doubt that future generations will look back and ask, what were they thinking? In many ways, we find ourselves 30 plus years down the chronic disease pathway due to a perfect storm that was building around the 1950s in the US. Now, for those of you who don't know, middle-aged businessmen were starting to die from heart attacks at an alarming rate. Now, couple that with an increasing cost of domestic food production and a president who wanted to get re-elected, and you've got the perfect conditions for some dodgy dietary guidelines. Oh, and throw in a healthy dose of ego from a few people who had a theory, and they were not going to allow scientific debate to change their minds. So enter a guy called Dr. Ansel Keys. You may well have heard of him. He developed the hypothesis that eating fat makes you fat, which causes coronary heart disease. He was a marine biologist who worked at the University of Rochester in Minnesota. And back in the early 1940s, he was actually given the task of ascertaining the minimum number of calories needed by a soldier to survive in World War II. Now, after the war, Dr. Keyes looked at the data from post-war Europe, and he couldn't explain why coronary heart disease decreased when people were consuming less calories. So he developed a theory that a full calorie diet contained more fat and more cholesterol than a starvation diet. And he subsequently developed the diet heart hypothesis, or otherwise known as the lipid hypothesis. And he claimed American citizens should move away from animal fats and adopt polyunsaturated fats in their diets. Now, Ansel Keys managed to convince the American Heart Association to support his diet heart hypothesis by presenting his findings from his six countries study at a symposium in Mount Sinai Hospital in New York in January 1953. But what many didn't know at the time was that Dr. Keyes's overwhelming evidence from his six-country studies was deliberately misleading. See, Dr. Keyes claimed that there was a linear relationship between the risk of coronary heart disease and the amount of fat consumed in the diet. In other words, the more fat you ate, the more you increased your risk of coronary heart disease. But the original study actually involved 22 countries, not six. Dr. Keyes had conveniently cherry-picked the data to suit his own hypothesis. Now, the inclusion of all 22 countries reduced the supposedly strong association between the risk of coronary heart disease and fat consumption. So there's nothing quite like dodging up the data to support your own theory. It's also worth noting that the American Heart Association, who were convinced by Dr. Keyes to adopt his diet heart hypothesis, were heavily funded by the Institute of Shortening and Edible Oils and a company called Procter & Gamble. Now, why is this relevant? Well, you now had both an industry association and a private company with vested interests in ensuring American citizens moved away from eating animal fats towards a diet high in carbohydrates and polyunsaturated seed oils. Around the same time, you had President Richard Nixon struggling to get re-elected due to the high cost of domestic food production in the US. President Nixon directed his US Department of Agriculture to seek cheaper foods and cheaper food processing. And as a result, a product called high fructose corn syrup was adopted around the mid-1970s as an alternative to sugar from sugarcane. High fructose corn syrup was considered at the time to be an outstanding invention, given that it is 1.7 times sweeter than sucrose or table sugar. It's cheaper to produce, transport and store, and it increased the shelf life of food products. But ever since Dr. Keyes started telling everyone to reduce their fat intake and increase their carbohydrates, scientists were starting to question the validity of the hypothesis. And as a consequence, a US Senate Select Committee on Health and Human Needs, chaired by Senator George McGovern, was established to make recommendations to the US government about what Americans should be eating. Now, interestingly, the committee was actually initially established in 1968 to explore malnutrition in the southern states of America. But as the debate about fat and heart disease was heating up, the focus of the committee shifted towards making recommendations to the government. Now, Congress was pretty impatient to get some guidelines out to the public so that they could be seen to be doing something about diets. And remember, right up until this point in human history, people were happily eating healthy, locally grown foods. But the government of the day thought they should start educating everyone about what constitutes a supposedly healthy diet. Now, lots of scientists explained to the committee that there was no clear evidence to support the low-fat, high-carbohydrate recommendations. But the chair of the panel stated, and I quote, "Senators don't have the luxury that a research scientist does, waiting until the very last shred of evidence is in." Now, Ansel Keys, who has been described by some as the loudest voice in the room, won the day, and as a result, the US government encouraged people to dramatically reduce their fat intake from 40% to 30%, with the majority being polyunsaturated oils, and increase their carbohydrate intake to around 50 to 60%. The first US dietary guidelines were released in 1980, and as soon as the guidelines were released, the government had effectively declared farmers and manufacturers of breads, cereals, margarine, and soy products the winners, and producers of eggs, meat, butter, and cheese as the losers. Now, not surprisingly, food manufacturers produced food products in accordance with the dietary guidelines by swapping the fat content with carbohydrates while cleverly marketing their foods as low fat. And the Australian dietary guidelines were also released in 1980, and not surprisingly, they were identical to the US version. The next 20 to 30 years involved convincing everyone, particularly those in the medical fraternity, that eating fat was to be avoided and that carbohydrate consumption was to be promoted. Cholesterol in particular was demonized as the leading cause of heart attacks and stroke. And have a listen to my podcast about cholesterol if you have been convinced that it causes heart attacks and strokes. Now, there's some people who claim that we shouldn't be blaming the dietary guidelines for our explosion in obesity and chronic disease because they claim that few people eat according to the guidelines. And yes, that is true. I've never met anyone who looks at their plate and declares that 50 to 60% of their food is carbohydrate and less than 10% of their fat is from animal sources. But what's undeniable is the explosion in processed foods that contain sugar and are marketed as low fat to the unsuspecting public. Now, I'll give you an example. It was only up until recently that a box of Milo cereal carried the Heart Foundation tick of approval because it contains no fat, which is pretty mind-boggling given that 100 grams of the cereal is equivalent to 7 teaspoons of sugar. Now, no parent would place a bowl in front of their child at breakfast, heap 7 teaspoons of sugar into it and say, "Eat up." And speaking of the Heart Foundation tick of approval, this scheme was a commercial opportunity developed by the American Heart Association years ago. And for those of you who don't know, the American Heart Association was this little fledgling group of cardiologists in the late 1950s who existed on a very small budget up until a major food manufacturing company called Procter & Gamble decided to donate $1.7 million, and that's the equivalent of about $17 to $18 million in today's terms. Now, the American Heart Association claimed that there is no conflict of interest in receiving funds from a major food manufacturer. Now, similarly, for the past 26 years, the Australian Heart Foundation have sold their tick of approval to any company that produces a food that doesn't contain saturated fats. And in 2013 alone, the tick of approval scheme netted the National Heart Foundation $2.8 million. Yet, as a consequence of other heart associations around the world being courageous enough to get rid of this system, the Australian Heart Foundation decided to, in their words, retire the tick of approval program in 2015. Yet, sadly, in its place, a 5-star rating system has been introduced, which essentially looks the same as the energy rating you see on the side of white goods and TVs and any other household item that draws power. It was introduced in the hope of educating people about making healthy food choices. And the federal government has spent just over $2 million promoting a scheme that rates a product like Up and Go, Sanitarian Up and Go, which is a milk-based carbohydrate drink, as 4.5 stars out of 5, so supposedly healthy, and it rates butter as 0.5 star. So the food industry has essentially been given the green light, courtesy of dietary guidelines that have no scientific basis, to manufacture and market foods as supposedly healthy because they are low in fat. And for the past 30 years, or more, across many developed nations, we have found ourselves in a situation where buying foods that are high in sugar is nearly unavoidable. So that's a very, very brief historical perspective of how we've got to this point in time where one in two people are overweight or obese. Dodgy science pushed by big egos and big industries with a goal to make as much money as possible. In closing, here's something to remember. At no other time in human history have people been instructed to eat a specific diet. Yet nearly 40 years ago, governments at the time thought it was important to advise people of what to eat. And sadly, the advice, while well-intentioned, was based on some dodgy science and conveniently hijacked by the food industry. And we're now living with the consequences of a long-running research project that none of us signed up to. For more information, go to lowcarbcoach.com.au. Thanks for listening.